Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rarious Fundamental Podcast, Episode 5. Sometimes I run, sometimes I hide. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. What's up, Internet? This is the Rarious Fundamental Podcast, Episode 5, recorded on March 1st and 2nd, 2015. How's it going, guys? It's been a while. All-Star Weekend has come and gone. You'll hear all about that later. But right now, I will get to what's bugging me at the moment. If you know me, I am big on communication. I'm not saying text me back immediately if I text you, or text me back when I'm sending pop song lyrics, which is what I actually do to some people. But I am big on people getting back to me when I'm asking a simple question, or when you tell me you're going to text or call me and you don't do it. You know, it really shouldn't take that much to text someone else back, oh, hey, no, or something, or I can't call you because blah, 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 blah. I mean, I understand for the most part. I'm a big boy. I mean, case in point, you tell me, oh, I'm going to call you on Thursday. So I'm going to set aside some time on Thursday expecting a phone call. With the way my job is right now, time is so precious to me. I'm going to give you a couple of hours for a BS session, and that's a lot of time to me. But when I wait and wait and wait and you don't call, what does that tell me? You're wasting my time. It's one thing if you do it once, although I think it's a pretty big deal if you already do it once. But, you know, you have an excuse. Maybe, oh, I fell asleep, or, hey, my mom called me, or something like that. But if you do it multiple times, then that is just, that's just horrible. And you're wondering why I would ignore people from then on, because, you know, you ignore me, well, I'm going to ignore you back. Same thing with another friend. Ask a simple question. Hey, when are we going to hang out? And I get ignored multiple times. And I'm not the type that would text you 4 days in a row for an answer. If you're just going to leave me hanging, where does our friendship stand? That sucks. I'd rather get a, hey, no, I don't want to hang out with you. At least you're being honest and I know where you stand. But if you're just going to leave me hanging like that, then you're just going to make me wonder if you hate me, you know? I mean, being ignored sucks. That's why I do it to people that cross me. I will just ignore them because I know being apathetic towards someone is the worst thing you can do. Because, God, who likes being ignored? You know, I want to know where I stand with you if you actually care about our friendship. And this has happened to me a few times. I don't think I'm a bad guy. I just want to know where we stand. That's all, you know. I'm not a creep. I'm not going to, like, creep on you or, you know, on Facebook or whatever. I just want to know where we are in terms of our friendship. Don't be a jerk. This is why some relationships and friendships fall apart. Because people just for some reason refuse to communicate, whatever it is. We would all get along so much better if we were actually considered to say something back. Even if it's being honest. You know? Like I said, I'm a big boy. I'm in my 30s, just tell me, and maybe I'll be hurt a little bit if it stings that much, but for the most part, I'll get over it, you know? I mean, I've been through worse. So, you know who has no trouble communicating? My guests that I've had on this podcast. So, Adam Reisinger of ESPN is my guest, and yeah, of course, we're going to talk about basketball, since that's my bread and butter, but what we're really here to talk about? Britney Spears. I know some pretty big Britney Spears fans, but Adam is near or at the top of this list in terms of being that. So, here he is, Adam Reisinger of ESPN. We're going to talk about some Britney, bitch.
On the line in the fifth episode of Rarious Fundamental, Adam Reisinger, former social media editor for ESPN NBA. How come you're a former social media editor now? What's going on here?
Just doing different stuff at ESPN now.
Oh, okay, that's cool. So what do you do now exactly?
I'm working with a group called ESPN Now.
Yeah, so that's like, ESPN Now is like, basically like, what, different polls, documentaries, what's going on here?
It's basically if you download the new ESPN app, which I recommend everyone does, every sport column and the homepage has what's called a now section, which is a sort of live, short form, quick updating coverage of the world of sports.
Sweet. So you're covering everything now, just not the NBA, right?
Correct.
Awesome. So when you were social media for ESPN NBA, is like, did you have any restrictions? Because I was doing social media for, Lakers Nation for, not Lakers, but like their other sites, but I was restricted to some things. Were you restricted to anything? Obviously besides the obvious, like, you know, cursing and everything like that.
Yeah, there are NBA video and, content restrictions that we have to follow, you know, I mean, because if people think of the internet as sort of like the wild, wild west and like, oh, you know, if I can shoot a vine of it off my TV, it's totally legal. Well, it's not. And so we have to follow those rules. And, you know, a lot of other places have to follow those rules too. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And we always did.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because, like, the NBA does vines now too themselves.
Yeah, well, because the NBA makes their own rules for themselves. They get to set their rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I recently read a tweet from, I don't know if you went to the Sloan Conference. Did you go? No?
No, I didn't get to go this year.
Okay, but like, Adam Silver was asked a question about, NBA videos being on YouTube and why they're not going after him. And Adam Silver just simply said, marketing.
Yeah.
You're, I mean,
it makes total sense because for whatever tiny bit of advertising profit the NBA might lose from having like some random guy put up a highlight video, they would get so much more negative publicity for like constantly putting up takedown requests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically like a Alexei Shved bad pass. They're not going to go after that. They're just like, okay, whatever. This is funny, right?
Yeah.
Did you go to All-Star Weekend?
Oh, I did, yes.
Okay, so a few things here. The Slam Dunk Contest, I mean, Magic Johnson always jokes that it's back every season, but is it really back now with Zach LaVine's performance? Because that was incredible.
See, the thing is, I don't think the Dunk Contest is back necessarily. Like, because it wasn't much of a contest. It was Zach LaVine destroying everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, theoretically, and I mean, he said he didn't even do his best dunk. Like, he had one ready to go if he needed to break out something even better.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know who there is that, I mean, there's got to be someone out there that could put up, you know, a competition with him. But it still doesn't feel like the classic days where you had Jordan and Dominique and, you know, Spud and all these other guys in the late 80s, Clyde Drexler in there. And then in the early 90s, you had Larry Johnson and Sean Kemp. I mean, these are guys, Johnson and Kemp never even won one. But, like, mm-hmm. you felt like they had a chance every year and they were doing great stuff every year. Now the dunk contest every year is, like, these young guys who show up once. Maybe someone wins it with a great performance. Maybe someone wins it with an okay performance. And then they don't do it again.
Mm-hmm. Does it need the star power? Or you just think that it needs like a being to participate every year and some other up-and-comers are just like so good that you'll need a star power?
I don't think it needs the star power necessarily. I think part of the problem is, and it's funny, it relates back to the first thing we talked about with the vines and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every great dunk that happens now at any level, from high school to college to the pros to street ball, whatever, it's all on the internet in like 15 seconds after it happens.
Right. That's incredible.
And so it's not like we're bored with dunks, but we've seen everything that someone can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, we were amazed with what Zach LaVine did at All-Star Weekend. And then, of course, like, the next day, the highlight truthers started to come out. Like, oh, well, he just did the same dunk four times. It's like, no, well, he didn't do the same dunk four times. He put twists on it. But that said, like, there's, like, it didn't feel like there's, that Zach LaVine's dunks were so crazy that there's no one out there that could do them. Or, mm-hmm. you know, again, it goes back to the culture in the 80s and 90s, when you saw a great dunk in the dunk contest, you know, you would see guys out on the playground trying to do that dunk and failing over and over and over again. And now what happens is someone does a great dunk in the dunk contest, and the next day you see something on YouTube of guys doing even better dunks.
Right. Yeah. Nothing groundbreaking. Although Victor Oladipo's reverse 360 double pump was awesome.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Giannis' brother, right, did it the next day or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's like, oh, man, I can't imagine anyone doing that dunk. And then literally the next day, you know, obviously if it wasn't Giannis' brother, we wouldn't have known it. We just would have said some random D-leaguer did the same dunk.
Yeah. So what we're missing here, besides consistent great dunkers, are also that signature dunk that we haven't ever seen before that no one else can do, right?
Yeah, there's a difficulty level that we need to hit that we haven't, and I'm not sure that we can necessarily without stretching the limits of the human imagination.
Yeah. They mentioned a 540. I haven't seen a 540 dunk of it being done yet. Is that possible?
Yeah, some people were calling Victor Oladipo's dunk at All-Star Weekend a 540, and it
is not a 540.
It wasn't really. It was It was a 360 where he ended up, he started on one side of the rim and ended on the other, so it kind of looked like a 540. If we ever got someone doing a true, like, straight on at the rim 540, or, you know, amazingly possible a 720, that would be, then you could start screaming, oh, the dunk contest is back, shut it down.
Yeah, there was, what was that, it was a 720, like a few years ago on Streetball? What's his name?
I forget who it was. It might have been the air up there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we've only seen it once, and I'd like to see that again. So hopefully someone in the NBA. Zach Harper, a few episodes ago, mentioned Markel Brown from the Nets. I haven't seen his stuff until he did a 360 on a breakaway a couple days ago. So maybe hopefully he can go get Zach Levine.
And unlike DeMar DeRozan, actually successfully completed 360.
Right. The three-point shootout, which Stephen Curry just buried in the final round. But I have a question on the three-point contest, because it was never broke to begin with. But why the multicolored ball rack? I didn't like that.
They put that in a couple years ago because
the
scores were getting low, and like it just feels like such a bad gimmick. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we've got a whole rack of, and you now. Now what happens is not that stats for these three-point contests are that important, but you can't compare eras anymore. Because, like,
yeah.
When people said, oh, Steph Curry matched Craig Hodges' score or came close or whatever it was, but he had a whole rack of two-point balls to do it with.
Yeah. I mean, I know he made 13 straight, which is, I think, the second longest streak in a three-point contest, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because I know Hodges won 19 in a row. But, like, they're all saying, oh, he beat Craig Hodges and Jason Capone's score, but he had two-point balls to help him with. So, I don't know. I don't like it. I never liked it to begin with. I hope they do away with it, but...
I think they need to ditch that and just go back to the normal three-point contest setup. I do like what they did with the skills competition, which is normally, like, one of the most useless competitions ever, and the head-to-head thing was actually cool, and it forced guys to give full effort. That said, they need to make you actually complete each challenge next year, because Pat Beverly just failing at his three attempts at one station every time and winning the contest was embarrassing.
Also, there were less passing stations. You know, there's only like one, I believe. It seemed like it.
Yeah, that was the one that Patrick Beverly couldn't do.
Yeah. So it wasn't exactly a complete obstacle course. It was just like, I don't know, it was shorter and it was the race. The race is kind of cool, but I don't know. I've never been too fond of the skills contest.
Yeah, in the past it always seemed like this gimmick and guys would half-ass it and not try. And you'd see guys put up like times of like 40 seconds when the winner was in the 25s. And it's like, okay, you're just, you don't care. Like, why did you even agree to do this?
Yeah.
But
what about the shoot? Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
But this year, I felt like they got closer to the right setup. They just need to make sure that there's a rule in place that you have to complete a station. You can't just get through with three attempts at it and move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unlike, you know, in a couple of years, because like I said, there are fewer stations, and I guess they want to make it quicker, but at the same time, it's like, well, it isn't really stuff.
Yeah, if you're like Patrick Beverly and you get stuck at the Bounce Pass station and you can't finish the course, that's on you. That means you lack a skill in the NBA.
Yeah, you can't pass Patrick Beverly. And also, like, didn't he, like, who was he going against when he nailed that guy?
Oh.
It was during the layup.
Was it Brandon Knight that he Brandon knocked Knight, layup yeah. out? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, he wasn't exactly abiding by the rules per se or whatever, so.
Yeah. Maybe the key next year is just don't invite Patrick Beverly.
He was an alternate too, and he won.
Yeah.
For the record, I love Patrick Beverly. Like, he is the epitome of a 90s player right there.
Hey, stick around. We'll have more of Adam Reisinger after this promo and after this song.
This is Zach Harper of CBSSports.com. You're listening to Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast, because Ray Ray is fundamental. You know, like those NBA commercials with the reading is fundamental. You get what I mean.
Baby, can't you see I'm calling? A guy like you should wear a warning. It's dangerous. I'm flying. There's no escape. I can't wait. I need a hit. Baby, give me it. You're dangerous. I'm loving it.
The shooting stars. They made that shorter too. They used to have like, what, six shots, and now it's down to four. But it's basically a glorified half court shooting contest.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to every year. It's you know, and even this year, like, I can't remember which team it was, but one of them got sort of stalled up at the one of them had trouble making the it's not even a layup anymore. It's sort of like an 8-footer or whatever. One of them had trouble making that, and then one of them got stalled at the 3-pointer. But really, everyone makes it through those first three shots in like 30 seconds or so, and then it does just turn into who can make a half court shot the quickest. I say just skip the formality of the first three stations and just turn it into have these three people taking half court shots for a minute, and whichever team makes the most wins. Like, to me, that would be even more entertaining.
That would be kind of entertaining. I would like that. Sure. I was talking to Zach about two-ball. Do you remember two-ball?
Oh, yeah.
Did you like it?
The NBA's first attempt to shoehorn the WNBA into All-Star Weekend.
Right. Did you like that?
No, it was bad. The Shooting Stars at least is somewhat entertaining, but like I said, just cut it down to just half-court shots. Everyone loves half-court shots.
What about horse?
They tried that at All-Star Weekend, and it was so bad.
Right. They should just, like, I don't know, do it on a separate day and just edit the footage and then just televise it, right?
Yeah, because I feel like NBA fans aren't even necessarily interested in who would win a horse competition. It's just they want to see what kind of crazy shots they come up with.
Right, yeah. I know James Harden did some sort of horse contest with fans. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so just... Yeah, again, like, don't try to make it this big deal, like, and I mean, maybe it grows into that, but for the start, yeah, just do it at some point during All-Star Weekend, edit it down to the best shots, the letter shots, and put in some rules that, like, because you can't, like, you put in a rule that you can't just say, like, okay, I'm shooting a free throw, and you know that the other guy sucks at shooting free throws.
Yeah, if DeAndre Turner was ever in a horse contest against Stephen Curry or something like that. Alright, so what do you think of the season so far? It's been kind of weird. The Hawks are on top. The Cavs, obviously LeBron James, are basically near the top of the East, and the Warriors and the Grizzlies are thriving. Any word on the season?
I think, God, it's so hard to judge this season because of
this feels like the first time in a long time where the champion, like, we can't predict the champions this year.
Yeah, all the injuries that have happened this year have made this season really weird. I mean, obviously, OKC with Durant and Westbrook being in and out, and you've got Cleveland with LeBron missing that stretch. And then, but I mean, there have even been other weird, like, you know, Miami missed Wade for extensive time and now is without Bosch for the rest of the year. So instead of being in, like, the middle of the pack in the East, they're, like, fighting for their playoff lives. You know, San Antonio missed Kawhi Leonard for a huge stretch. So they had a stretch where they looked like, it was like, what are they doing? And then Kawhi came back and they looked great. And now again, they look like, what are they doing? You know, the Suns game aside, the Clippers, like, there are injuries that we forget about. Like, the Clippers have been playing without Blake Griffin for, it seems like, forever now.
Yeah.
And he's still got a few weeks before he comes back. I can't remember the last time Dwight Howard played. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm starting to wonder, like, is he going to play again this year? And yet Houston is still, you know, near the top of the West.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we forget, while the Hawks have been on top, they've also been the healthiest.
Yeah, like, they, against the Heat, they were without three of their starters. But, like, that was the first time where it felt like they were like, oh man, the Hawks have injury problems. Like, they basically had their core starting five together all season.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing with the Warriors, too. I mean, they missed Boga for a couple of seconds, but, like, other than that, like, they've been pretty healthy.
Yeah, and he's important because if he's not healthy for the playoffs, I feel like they could be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is, I don't want to say they look unbeatable because they don't look that good. You know, they're very good, but unbeatable is a strong word. But they'd be tough to beat if Bogut is healthy and all their other guys are obviously healthy and playing at a high level.
Injuries aside, don't you think that every West team is vulnerable? Because it's so strong right now. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Warriors didn't survive the first round.
Like, that's the thing. If you look at the standings in the West, 1 through 8, if you assume Oklahoma City makes it in that 8th spot, there is no first round matchup where you look at the team that has home court and you're like, oh, they should win this easy.
Yeah. It's been wild. The West has been getting wilder every season.
Like, any four teams that make the playoffs in the West could advance to the second round.
Exactly. And it's just been insane. Like, people ask about the Clippers, like, they're not contenders this year. I'm like, they sure are. I mean, I think every West team that makes the playoffs is a contender, in my view.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you don't think of the Clippers necessarily as a front-line contender because they haven't been great on the road, and they haven't... At no point in the season have they been in near the top of the West.
Yeah.
But they're basically two games out of having home court advantage in the first round. And very quietly, Chris Paul is playing at an MVP level. He has no chance of getting into discussion because of how crowded that race already is. Yeah. And I think we've reached the point where voters are going to hold his lack of playoff success against him, unfairly so. But
yeah.
He's been putting up great numbers all year.
Yeah, plus there's been talk about Stephen Curry, James Harden, LeBron always in the conversation. And now Russell Westbrook, who had a 31-9-10 month. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. And what's even crazier to realize, though, is as great as Russell Westbrook's numbers are, like, if this latest injury keeps him out for, like, another week or more, it's just going to hit the end of the season, and he's not going to have enough games played for people to vote for him as MVP over those other guys.
Right, yeah. And, of course, people forget that the Thunder won that month when he went 31-9-10.
Yeah.
Hey there, folks. It's your girl, Jackie Mesa Pepper from PepperOnSports.com, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast.
Yeah, so enough NBA talk. We're here to talk about Britney Spears.
The real important stuff.
The real important stuff, because, again, I rebranded this podcast so that we can talk about whatever the heck we want, although I'm not going about my basketball audience. We know that I'm a basketball blogger, but we're here to talk about Britney Spears. So how did this get started with you? Because for me, I remember my brother taking home, what song was it? Born to Make You Happy, a demo CD, like the single of that. That's, I saw it from my brother and I listened to it. It's okay, I guess, you know. Then I saw the video Baby One More Time and my world changed. How did your world change?
Okay, so, yeah, this is going to tell everyone essentially how old I am, but it was my freshman year of college, and one of my good friends in who I had, you know, just become friends with at college, you know, it's like the first couple months of school, and you just essentially become friends with the first people you meet, but she actually turned out to be a good friend, and I still keep in touch with her. She had the Backstreet Boys album, and at the end of the album, it wasn't even a hidden track. It was just sort of tacked on at the end. It was the Backstreet Boys introduced, like, hey, here's our label mate, Britney Spears. Check out her first single. And it was Baby One More Time, and I heard it. And I was like, this is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. So this was before the video. This is before I ever even saw what Britney Spears looked like. So for most of college and even into, you know, adulthood, people were clowning me, like, oh, you just like Britney Spears because of how she looks and her videos. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I heard the music first and fell in love with that, and then all the other stuff came later.
Right, yeah. When I saw the video, I was like, oh, my God. And at the same time, I was like, how old is she again? At the time, I was 20. I was 20, I believe. So I'm just kind of like, is she legal yet?
Yeah, that was stuff like that. That was the other thing. For the first couple Britney albums, like, people would always, like, if you were an adult or, you know, in your early 20s, someone who liked Britney Spears, people would always act like, oh, you're so creepy, you like Britney Spears. And I had to keep reminding people that Britney Spears is literally 1 year younger than me. Like, there is no creepiness factor at all to that. Like, she is she is firmly within my age group. And always has been.
Right. And then Sometimes came out, and then all these other singles came out, and Oops, I Did It Again. It was just like, she was everywhere for, like, what, the first 3-4 years, basically?
Yeah, I mean,
That Super Bowl commercial? Oh, my God. I was totally in love with her there. I thought that was, like, peak Britney right there.
Yeah, she did Super Bowl halftime.
Right, with NSYNC, right?
NSYNC and Aerosmith and Nelly. It was the most overloaded Super Bowl halftime show ever, and it was phenomenal.
Exactly. God, we sound like creeps right now. But you were razzing me when I said that Sometimes it's my favorite Britney Spears song. It still is, and you're kind of wondering why. I just like the it sounds so weird because I'm like the it was like the innocence of it, basically. I love the video, and, you know, I just liked it. It just sounded so simple and nice, and, you know, young love and everything. That's why I like Sometimes.
Okay.
It's not iconic, but, you know, that's my reason.
So back in 2009, this was shortly after Circus had come out. I was going to see Britney in Las Vegas, back on the Circus tour. This was way before she did the Las Vegas residency that she has now. And on my old website, I ranked every individual Britney Spears song. And Sometimes came in at number 33 in my ranking.
Hey, 33 out of how many?
Out of, at the time, it was 103.
Oh, my gosh. That's even more ambitious than that Taylor Swift song list that I saw that counted them down. Seriously, like, I saw this Taylor Swift list. It was like 90 songs at the time. So 103?
103, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically like all her singles from her, not all her songs from her albums at the time.
Every individual song that had come out from an album or, like, B-sides, anything like that.
Wow. That's incredible. Like, I don't know how you can do that kind of stuff.
I was very bored that summer.
I have a question here. Like, do you know that she remade the Jets? Of course she did. She remade the Jets You've Got It All. You know that one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where did that rank? Because I thought that was an okay remake. Because I love the Jets in the 80s.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if that one necessarily made the list because it wasn't an official release.
Right. Yeah, but she did remake that. Where did that, was that, I wonder if that was like in her one of her, like, I don't know, European albums.
It might have been. And at the time, I didn't consider anything that was only released on, like, a, you know, a European, like, it had to be something that you could easily get in the U.S.
So I assume you collect Britney Spears merchandise.
Some of it, yeah.
What's the most prized Britney Spears merchandise that you own?
I actually have it's from the Pepsi campaign that ended up as the Super Bowl commercial. I have one of those in-store display life-size stand-ups of Britney Spears.
Nice. So it's like in your room somewhere, basically?
Right now it's in my basement. Like, it's not on display anywhere because I'm in the process of moving between homes. But, yeah, it used to be a big part of my decor.
I need a picture of that just so I can put on the blog later.
I can get that for you.
Awesome. Thanks. So what is your favorite Britney Spears song? Like, is it one of the iconic ones, or is it one of the hidden ones that we don't know?
At the time, in 2009, I had it as Slave for You. But I keep going back and forth between that and Toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the first time I heard Toxic, I wasn't a big fan of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that album was, that more than the previous album, you know, the Britney album is what usually gets categorized as her transition from the teen pop star to the normal pop star. But the In the Zone album was really the cementing of this is her adult sound. This is dance music. And at my first listen to it, I was like, God, I don't know if I like this. And then, you know, eventually, like, I don't want to say it wore me down, but like I just kept listening to Toxic over and over again. I was like, well, this is actually really good.
Yeah, I felt the same way with Toxic. Like, it took me like a few listens before, like, okay, it's actually a good song. I'm a Slave for You. That, like, it was weird to me at the time because, like I said, she was making that transition from, like, teen pop to adult pop stars. So, at the time, it was weird, but now it's, like, one of the sexiest music songs ever, basically.
Yeah.
So, So, what was your reaction when she shaved her head?
There was, again, going back to my old vlog, I feel like there was a time, I can't find it, there was a time when I wrote a post like, I'm done with Britney Spears. Like, she reached a point where it was just like, it was frightening to see the spiral she was on.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously she ended up recovering and getting her life back together and all that. Which is great.
It was a quick recovery too. It didn't seem that long that she was suddenly like back on it.
Yeah, it was really just like things spiraled out of control in like a 3-month period, and then everything was, and then it's like she snapped out of a trance, you know, named Kevin Federline, and was like, oh wait, no, I'm Britney Spears. I'm so much better than this.
Yeah, a former flame of mine wanted to dress like Britney Spears. And she wanted to meet herself as Kevin Federline. I kind of wish that happened now for Halloween. But yeah, it was quick. Like she shaved her head, and then she did the MTV VMAs, which was a disaster because she was out of shape and she was wearing a wig. And then suddenly, Womanizer came on. I was like, whoa, that was quick. She's back in business all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I have To link this back to basketball, I have this theory essentially that Britney Spears' album career can be mapped to Michael Jordan's basketball career. And basically what it is that the Baby One More Time album is her Jordan rookie season. Rookie of the Year comes out, sets the world on fire. Then Oops, I Did It Again is the scoring championship, the dunk contest, that Jordan. Britney is that sort of, it's still great, but it's that awkward transition, and it's basically maps up with the Jordan Rules Pistons years, where Jordan couldn't get past Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And then In the Zone is first three-peat Jordan. It's best of the best. You know, you've got that, it's that defined, matured, perfection sound. Then you get Britney and Kevin Chaotic is Birmingham Barons Michael Jordan. Full of bad decisions, what are you thinking? Oh my God, this is horrible. Please, please, please fix this. Blackout, the first comeback album, is Jordan wearing 45. And then Circus is second three-peat Jordan. It's like, okay, this is what we wanted. This is, This is Hall of Fame level. Everything's great again. Femme Fatale is Washington Wizards Jordan. Okay, there's some flashes of what we remember as greatness, but it doesn't feel right. You know, there's something just off here. And then Brittany Jean is Bobcats owner Jordan.
This is incredible.
As you can tell, I've probably thought about this a little too much.
I don't know what to say, because I was like waiting for you. It's like maybe and her Vegas residency is like what?
Is
the Jordan shoes?
It's her Vegas residency is yes. It's essentially Jordan brand. It's capitalizing off the nostalgia of the past. You know. Just raking in money without actually doing anything new.
We're going a little longer than usual in this podcast. We'll be right back with more from Adam Reisinger and some more Britney Spears talk.
It's going down. I'm yelling timber. You better move. You better dance. Let's make a night. You won't remember. I'll be the one. You won't forget.
Swing your partner round and round, end of the night is going down. One more shot, another round, end of the night is going down. Swing your partner round and round, end of the night is going down. One more shot, another round, end of the night is going
it's
down.
Going down. I'm yelling timber, you better move, you better dance. Let's make a night.
I wonder if we're going to see an album from her again. I mean, she's still relatively young at 30, 33.
Yeah, there's got to be a new album coming eventually, but like Britney Jean did nothing. Like it didn't hit number one. It didn't even go gold. You know, it didn't move units at all. It didn't register singles. Like essentially it was just an album to coincide with the Vegas residency. Like, hey, I'm starting this Vegas thing and here's a new album to go with it.
Yeah, so hopefully she comes out with a new one soon. I mean, again, in fact, she's only 33. Still plenty of years, really, for a pop star, basically, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see going forward if she, you know, if she does the Madonna frequent reinvention thing, or if she just sort of settles for what she has, which is, you know, a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I think Britney herself reinvented plenty of times, so... again, hopefully she has an album coming out maybe this year, maybe next year. So, when the other pop princesses were out there, like, did you feel like Britney was gonna lose it at some point? Like Christina Aguilera, Mandy Moore, Jessica Simpson, both were out there.
There was never a point where I was threatened by Jessica or Mandy. Or, like Willa Ford, you know, any of the cheap imitators that came along. But there was definitely a point in the post, basically the 4 year gap between In the Zone and Blackout where I thought Christina had passed her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I
don't know. It was weird because like Christina, what was her second album, Strip? After Strip, I felt she didn't make much of a dent on the charts after that.
Well, it was when Back to Basics came out, because Strip was her ex-Tina, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was Dirty, and I mean, I love Dirty as a song, I'm not going to lie. But but that whole vibe for her wasn't right. And then she came out, she dropped Back to Basics, and, you know, it had so many good tracks. And meanwhile, Britney hadn't done anything. Like, she hadn't done anything right. In 3 years, and it was like, maybe Christina won, just by, like, calming down and focusing on her voice. And then Blackout came out, and it, you know, it had some good tracks on it, but it wasn't great overall. And you were like, oh, man, is Britney done? And then Circus came out, and we're like, nope, Britney won. and it's funny because Britney has been so much more successful at the reinvention thing. Because obviously she made that transition from teen to adult pretty well. Circus sort of still had that same in the zone-y sound, but it was a little more mature. But then she transitioned to Femme Fatale, and it was very dance heavy. And Christina had actually tried to do that earlier. She essentially tried to put out a Lady Gaga album with Bionic, and it was bad. There's just no other way to describe it. It was bad.
So, who is, not that Britney's going away anytime soon, but who's her basic successor at the moment? Lady Gaga? Miley Cyrus?
It doesn't even feel like, it feels like there was a time when it was Gaga, but Gaga has almost sort of, I don't want to say faded away, because you know, she just had that stunning performance at the Oscars.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's not essentially doing the Lady Gaga thing anymore. Art Pop, her last album wasn't a huge success. The tour was, her tours are always a success. But I feel like she's due for a transition too. Like, and I feel like the next transition for her is to doing more stuff like that Oscars performance and just straight up, you know, basically succeeding on the strength of her voice. Which is phenomenal. I feel like it's a generation gap between the two, but the new Britney feels like it's Ariana Grande.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
she's got an excellent voice. She just can't enunciate.
That's not usually the comparison everyone makes with her because she sounds almost identical to mid-90s Mariah Carey. So much so that it's scary. But it feels like she's the new young pop sensation that is going to achieve superstardom.
The thing with Ariana, like her first album was, well, because there's a generation here, like I'm a 90s R&B guy. Her first album was like a 90s R&B album. And I loved it. I thought it was like the best thing in years for me. Then her second album was like, it was okay. It was like, 2010s pop, basically.
It's funny because you're right. Her first album, and again, it's what lends itself to that Mariah Carey comparison. It felt like a lost Mariah Carey album. And I still listen to that one all the time.
Yeah.
Her second album feels very grounded in the now.
Yeah.
It feels like it. And apparently, and this is just from what I've read, I haven't had any experience actually dealing with Ariana Grande, but apparently she really hates the Mariah Carey comparison. And like won't talk about it in interviews. And like, if you bring up the name Mariah Carey around her, she flips out from what I've read. I have no idea if this is true or not, but so it makes sense to me that on her second album, she tried as hard as possible to avoid that sound. And I mean, there are some good singles off of it, but it's not the great listen that the first album is.
Yeah, I still listen to the first one myself. Yeah, so you didn't mention Miley, so I assume like you don't think she's gonna be anywhere.
I almost feel like, I mean, it's funny because it's a natural comparison to make between Miley and Britney because they both had the Disney Channel TV success at a super young age. People always forget the Britney from the Mickey Mouse Club. And Miley obviously had Hannah Montana. The difference is that, of course, because of the way the Mickey Mouse Club was structured and just the times, like, Britney didn't have an image to break out of. Whereas Miley had to do something to prove that she wasn't, you know, Hannah Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that in quite a, you know, extreme way. but I gotta be honest, I miss Party in the USA, Miley.
I think a lot of us do, because, like, Miley Cyrus sticking out her tongue isn't exactly, like, I don't know. I just find it annoying.
It's weird because, again, it's the evolution of generations. You got, in the 80s, you had Madonna writhing on stage in the wedding dress, you know, singing like a virgin. And then in the 2000s, you have, you know, Brittany dancing in the bikini with the snake, and then and so it goes up a notch every time, and so Miley had to do something even more extreme, and that was it, and it was the moment where people were like, maybe we've gone a little too far here. I don't think that, and I mean, maybe her next album will come out and it'll be spectacular and she'll prove me wrong, but I don't think she's the successor anymore. I think her opportunity to be that has come and gone.
And then of course there's Kesha, who basically worked a, you know, garbage look gimmick, and I'm wondering what her next album will be, and I think she'll be all like, oh, classy Kesha, basically. That's what she'll be, I think, in her next album. What do you think?
Well, that's assuming that her next album ever even comes out. Like, apparently she's been in this feud with her producer. You know, she sued him for sexual assault, which is obviously a very serious matter.
Yeah.
But with that going on, like, the album is in limbo. And apparently they had huge disagreements over the last album too. Like, she wanted to change up her sound a little bit more from her first couple albums, and
yeah,
he was like, no, let's just stick with what works. And, you know, but her, in her public appearances, she's definitely been doing a more clean look.
Yeah.
And I do think that depending on what happens, she has the potential to do big things still. Hopefully more than just Timber, which is still the greatest thing ever.
You'll agree with me that we'll always have Timber.
We will always have Timber.
We'll always have Timber. Adam, it's been great talking basketball and Britney Spears and pop music. Oh my God, I have been dying to do this podcast with you for a while now.
Me too. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah.
Glad to be
on.
So
we'll do this again soon. Maybe, I don't know, maybe during the playoffs and stuff.
Sounds
playoffs. Cool.
Playoffs.
All right. Talk to you later.
Later.
Thank you to Adam Reisinger for educating me more about Britney Spears. I guess the basketball talk was good too, but like I said, the reason why I rebranded this podcast was so that I can talk about whatever I wanted. And before I go, give me that Timbaland beat, please. There you go. I just want to say that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also find this podcast at rayray.net. There is a hyphen between the rays. That's the way I like it. You can also follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass. And if you want to get updates on the podcast, you can also follow that Twitter account at rayrayisfun, because I am fun. Don't forget that Ray is spelled with an E. Follow my guest on Twitter at Adam Reisinger. You can spell Adam, but Reisinger is spelled R-E-I, singer. Again, great basketball mind and one of the biggest Britney Spears fans I know. I want to say what's up to Angelica Rakin, who made my very awesome logo and banner. And I want to say always what's up to the Gal Pal Squad, who always gives me great support. Sorry that it took like 3 weeks to make another podcast, but I assure you that the next one will come much sooner. So that's it. Just remember that Ray Ray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode.
It's Britney, bitch.
Mommy's got some things for Daddy to do.
Game over, yeah!
Moded.